Next is a meeting with disciples on October 20th, 1993, in Vrindavan.
When I came to Vrindavan this year, in early September, I was drawn to visit the Prabhupada Samadhi Mandir and in Prabhupada's residence rooms. And as all devotees do when they come here. And then it became a regular thing for me. I would go every day, I would go to both places, aside from the Mangalarati. And while I was there, I would write in a journal. So it came to about 200 pages. Once the VIHE began, so many devotees arrived, it wasn't possible for me to go in there without meeting people who wanted to have conversations. But I wrote about 200 pages, and so I went through it to pick some things for our meeting here. I think they're interesting to hear. From my point of view, I thought they're interesting, but then I thought, well, why am I reading it to this group, and how will they take this, and so on, meaning of my disciples. So I wanted to say something a little bit about that before. If you, by hearing this, if you become interested to visit the mandirs, the Prabhupada mandir and rooms, and that's very nice result of the reading. And if your desire is stimulated to pray to Srila Prabhupada, that's also nice. Everyone can make prayers to Prabhupada. And try to please him and seek his direction. This journal contains sketches of what the places are like and what the visitors are like, coming and going, and my mental state at the time I'm writing and trying to express myself to Prabhupada. Now, as far as my praying to Prabhupada, that's my unique way, and it's not something that you'd want to, that you could imitate or should imitate. Although in many ways our relationships to Krishna may be the same, or our relationship to Prabhupada, there are differences. So, in fact, Mata Mangal was going with me when I was going into these places. And so one day he was telling me what he was thinking or praying to Prabhupada, and it was a different kind of prayer than I made, because his relationship is different. I don't mean it's less advanced or less intense, but what I've gone through in relation to Prabhupada and what you've gone through, they're different because we're different persons. But because of my relationship with you, I assume that you'd just be interested also just to hear of my trying to approach Prabhupada in this way. My routine varied, but I'll just tell it. Sometimes early in the morning I was in Prabhupada's room. Sometimes at 10 o'clock I was in the Samadhi Mandir. Then at 4... usually what I would do is, except for an early morning visit to the Prabhupada's room, I would go out at some other time in the day, first go to the mandir for half an hour, and then go to Prabhupada's room. But I'll just tell you, where I was when I wrote each thing, at least that much. Or it will be obvious also. First entry here is September 3. Can you hear all right in the back? I'm looking forward to the presence of Prabhupada in his murtis at Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. You could say they are external, but then all deity worship is a manifestation in stone or brass of a form of the Lord, and it's for our benefit, and we need it. Then this is before I actually got to Vrindavan, so I was thinking how it's often difficult to approach the deity of Prabhupada because so many other people are doing it at the same time. It's like in the ladies, they can't even get near. And the men, they line up in a big line. You have to get at the end of the line or wherever you can fit in. So then I was thinking, yes, it's nice to want to find a time alone, but also I should be prepared to tolerate the conditions where you only get a brief moment in his presence. That's not only a toleration, but it's a sharing. It's a nice thing to see so many people coming to bow down before Prabhupada. It's not that we ultimately want to exist only with him alone. So I was trying to get ready for those difficulties and see them not only as difficulties. September 10. I wanted to go immediately after Mangal Aarti into Prabhupada's room and write down notes for a letter or meeting with Prabhupada, but the door was locked. Of course, Prabhupada is everywhere, especially in this Krishna Balaram Mandir. A sincere disciple will find Prabhupada in the heart. But it certainly is something special to be in his room and sitting before him, provided you are not distracted by the presence of too many other devotees there. I am confident that I am in Prabhupada's movement and under his general direction. I never think that he rejects me, and I am trying to return to him. So I am asking Prabhupada to please let me know what will please him the most. What can I do? I know I don't ask the question in an absolutely unconditional way, and Prabhupada knows this. But still, what's the use of living a life my way and not the way of my spiritual master? So I'm asking him to take into account my limits, but still let me know how I can please him. I'm trying to read his books, and if I can chant Hare Krishna nicely, that can please Prabhupada. And he wants to see me doing preaching work along with other devotees to rescue fallen souls. I am sure that any department in ISKCON that I engage myself in, where I can preach wholeheartedly, will be pleasing to Prabhupada. Anyway, I try to come before him and pray in this way. Then this was written in his room. My proposal, dear Srila Prabhupada, is to become your servant again. I am grown up, but I am your child. Please let me know better, and please let me know you. I want to read your books more, but also to know you in the heart, by prayer, and as a result of service. Today on your desk there is a letter to Satsvarupa, 26 May 1971. The letter is filled with at least a dozen specific instructions, most of them answers to practical inquiries. Some of them are not permanent instructions, such as, he says, no pictures with the recipes in Back to Godhead magazine, no drawings should appear in the magazine, etc. But when I received that letter, I followed whatever you said, and if I had any doubts, I inquired further. Thank you for the letter. Regarding my GBC zone in America, you said, encourage them more and more. Let me remember that and do it deeply. This is written now at the Prabhupada Samadhi Mandir. There are so many mandirs and tirthas in the Braja area. At this one I feel most comfortable. I belong here. People are coming by and throwing coins on your altar. There's the noise of workmen and songs broadcast from nearby ashrams or shops. But this is ISKCON and your place. I can even complete Parikram circumambulation just by circumambulating here. So for me, gradually it was a discovery of these places, although they're You can't miss them. They're sitting huge before you, especially the Samadhi Mandir. But I began to understand more about them and how they were for me. Every time I look up, I see a new group of your countrymen and women standing here in your mandir. Maybe they're not so serious about surrender to you, but they are pious and have a better birth than I. You gave a special mercy and attention to Westerners. I want to reciprocate. Jai Sri Radhe Radhe, someone says to me as he passes. I want to reply, Jai Srila Prabhupada. This is your mandir, and by serving you, we can serve Srimati Radharani. Swami Prabhupada belongs to India? A man asks Madhu. Not from America? I can't hear Madhu's reply. Some of them know so little about you. That's a funny one, isn't it? To think that you, Srila Prabhupada, came from America. The truth is, you came to America, but not exactly from India. You came from Goloka. You don't belong to India, but you gave your mercy to India specially. And Krishna's mercy comes from spiritual India. I come to your places and find that I have discovered the best thing in Vrindavan, and thus the best thing in all the worlds. I'm at home here. Allow me to be with you. O venerable Vaishnava, O ocean of mercy, be merciful to your servant. Give me the shade of your lotus feet and purify me. I hold on to your lotus feet. That's Vaishnava Thakur. They're looking at Srila Prabhupada and gesturing to the features of the walls of the inner sanctum. They don't know him very well. He's another great sadhu. Maybe without discrimination, they're visiting one mandir after another. But I live here. I discriminate. I stay at his lotus feet. At least that's my newly rediscovered secret. In Prabhupada's room. Wonderful conclusions and discoveries. Walk around the Srila Prabhupada Murti in the Samadhi. Take back love you gave to other tirthas. Give it here. No, don't take it back, but at least realize that this is the chief tirtha. Touch the wall and touch it to your head. I want to say, I was here when Srila Prabhupada left the world. I am part of his pastimes. This is literally a case of a person who wanders to many places, wanders far and wide seeking the holy place, and then finds it's in his backyard. Like Prabhupada says, the people in Calcutta, the Ganges is flowing right by their door, but they think when they want to go on a pilgrimage to the Ganges, they go all the way to Rishikesh. In the mandir. Devotees come to you with their petitions. I see a temple president from America standing before you with pranams. And now poor pious Indian people. One asks, who is he? Prabhupada, replies the caretaker who carries a pole for chasing pigeons. Huh? Prabhupada. Golden Prabhupada, they don't know you. And they don't know Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They barely know Krishna. In the West, they don't know anything. And so there is a great need to preach. What is Krishna and what is Prabhupada? They're circumambulating. A tyagi with big thick Vaishnava tilak, Babaji dress, tiffin and walking stick. And young wives and daughters and old men and beleaguered husbands and masses of people like earth, sacred earth of Vrindavan. Who is he? He's Prabhupada. I also ask the question in a different way. I ask, where are you now? How can I become close to you? The official answers are not complete. O Vaishnava Thakur again. I do not find the strength to carry on alone the Sankirtan of the holy name of Hari. Please bless me by giving me just one drop of faith with which to obtain the great treasure of the holy name of Krishna. Yes, I ask you for strength. The prayer suits me. No pretense, I mean it. Please give me the shade of your lotus feet. Give me good qualities. Give me strength to chant the holy name. I said I wanted a more equal friendship with you, but what I actually require is closeness, protection, and intimacy a guru grants to his disciple. It doesn't have to be equal. How can I claim it? But I am an old student. I want a little time with you. I want to hear your voice with inner ear, your form as you are, but myself enlightened to know you better. Not as equal, yet as dearmost friend to whom I can admit everything. Sometimes alone with you, and sometimes with you in the company of many persons who have come to be with you. They come and go. I also come and go from this mandir. But even when I go, let me keep you in my heart. And Srila Prabhupada's room. Everyone has a right to approach you. I should never be jealous if I see my, quote, own, unquote, disciples desiring to sit close to you, chant the holy name in your presence, and, yes, pray to you directly. You are open for everyone. I need it and they need it. They have found out the secret. Let me encourage them in this when I see it. And tolerate when someone in your room, meaning Prabhupada's room, is chanting loud, insistent japa, or singing with the clashing of kartels. People express their devotion to you in different ways. I'm just looking for a corner to sit in and write at your lotus feet. Krishna is yours. You have the power to give him to me. I am simply running behind you, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. Cello, cello. The teacher chases the students out. Otherwise, they would swarm around me and watch my strange script. I write in American language, Srila Prabhupada, so well known to you. I'm writing this in your holy room. You said you were invited to lecture once at a prison in Ahmedabad, and you spoke in front of the room where Gandhi stayed when he was imprisoned. You said, that room is considered holy. But your rooms are actually holy. I came into this room when only you sat here in the cold morning of February 1974. Then again, you were here after the Mayapur Festival of 74, and I was your servant. I'm an ordinary person from New York, but you gave me a chance to serve you and learn of Krishna. Still you offer that to me, and I eagerly take it. Prabhupada's room. As we enter, a Mataji caretaker of this house is preaching to guests in the reception room. Inside, an ISKCON brahmachari is taking a flash snapshot of Prabhupada at his desk. Visitors come in and out as they do in the Thoreau Symposium or the Elvis Presley Museum. Here we are, where we want to be, where we are most at home, in our spiritual master's museum rooms. He sits on the pillows and we sit watching him. Sometimes I am more mystically serious, thinking that Prabhupada may directly communicate to me. This morning I feel less ambitious in that way, but light-hearted, happy, and sure of my connection to my master. In the mandir, the white lions in sunlight. The marble columns and roof look sometimes soft like soap. The inner sanctum is devoid of colors, backdrops, lilas. The walls are black with a big white marble arch behind Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes I think it might be nicer to paint pastimes in there, but perhaps this stark aspect is best, reminding us of death, reminding us that only the form of Prabhupada is necessary and helping us fix the image of his form in our mind's eye. Yes, it's nice. Gold form, black walls, gold petal seat, black walls, marble arch. Under that spot is the form the devotees lowered on November 14th, 1977. Prabhupada's room. The sun is going down. Your last days and weeks in 1977 slipped away. The bell rang. You laid in bed and didn't eat. Your body gradually stopped functioning. Long hours of silence, chanting by your bedside. Young men at your bedside eager to serve you and very attached to their own preaching zones and assignments in various places around the world. You trained us that way to be totally dedicated to a temple or service. So when we came to see you after a week or two, we became restless to return to our Prabhudatta Desh. Partly, we wanted to be little lords, mahants, in our own zones. But the good part was that we wanted to fight on the battlefield as you ordered, distribute books, preach, change the world into Krishna consciousness. You mostly didn't want us to stay around Vrindavan with no specific preaching service. Get out and preach. Go back into your field. Of course, if your field is Vrindavan, then you don't have to go anywhere. Now I'm here in your samadhi, where your larger-than-life golden form sits in a black-walled inner sanctum. Your disciples wanted to remember you this way and offer the visitors the chance to worship you in samadhi, as is customary for great acharyas. The faith and enthusiasm of your disciples to serve you is a strong force in the world. Probably it's the main force driving the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON. As Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati ordered you and you went alone to America, so now hundreds and thousands of devotees, according to their capacities, try to carry out your order to preach and establish Krishna consciousness. We think you are somehow still present among us, controlling lives of sincere devotees. You see how things are developing, and you see how we have failed also. But somehow your movement continues, gains momentum, and spreads out into many different forms within and outside of the temple. Prabhupada's room. Things are always in flux. May your residence rooms always be here for us. And, dare I say it, may I spend my last days here or very close to the spirit of you here. The New York Times clipping in the glass case says, Swami Prabhupada Hare Krishna Head. It's in the obituary column with your picture. The implied word is Hare Krishna Head is dead. I often mistakenly read that obituary column as dead, but it doesn't say that. You're not dead, and neither am I, not a dead stone. Now a file of simple people come through. The man carries an old canvas bag, and his dhoti is that perpetual non-white of the poor people. He speaks in a loud voice, but not out of disrespect. A woman with him carries a big bundle balanced on her head, even while in your rooms. They come and go. And then come young men in Western pants. I don't look up, but glance at their feet. They go into your inner rooms, look around, and come out again. An Indian museum experience. They can go back to where they came from and say, I have been to Swami Prabhupada's house. I too. The mandir. Man with bushy Kshatriya mustache, fat belly behind the clean kurta and white pants. He stands surveying Prabhupada while his wife, a few feet in front of him, closer to Prabhupada, looks up. Well-dressed pilgrims. Their young son wears a new violet-colored Los Angeles t-shirt. A younger one comes to stand 1 foot in front of me, looking down into my notebook. Cello, cello, the older brother tells him. I'm getting used to it. Prabhupadji Maharaj, one man tells his group. Huh? Prabhupadji Maharaj. They look up at the ceiling. The paid man claps his hands to chase pigeons, but when they don't dislodge, he picks up his long bamboo pole and chases them. At least the place is not infested with nests and bird turds. These things happen every day. Why am I seeing only the outer forms? Maybe I have no deep inner purpose. The gold murti seems far away. His garland is yellow marigolds and roses. At 4 a.m. tomorrow morning, that garland is shriveled. The pujari gives it to me, and I wear it a few minutes, and then give it to someone else. Now, this next one is one that was a kind of a discovery of appreciation of the purpose of the Samadhi Mandir by me. This, quote, tomb, unquote, is a very public place, suitable for accommodating large groups of people who don't have much time or presence of mind. At least they can receive your darshan. So I shouldn't be upset at the casual mood here. Because that's what I was noticing more and more. The people were coming in, almost all Indian people. And not with disrespect, but just taking it like a casual thing. That's all they had capacity for. And so I was thinking, well, this isn't good. But then I realized this is good. And the place is built just for that, for large crowds to come and go, people who can't do more than that, and that's the benefit of the place. I shouldn't be upset at the casual mood here. They are always respectful, but it's like going into a public monument for them. The whole world of India can come and go here, and everyone can pay respect to India's great saint who went abroad and made mlechas into devotees of Krishna. I'm beginning to understand the genius and vision of this building. Yet in the 4:10 a.m. time, only devotees gather, and it is quiet and dark outside. Then the mood is different. At least now I can come and write, which I cannot do at 4 a.m. Sikh with pink turban, black beard, and his wife beside him. Men in white pajama-like pants and kurtas. Children, one infant crying. It's hard for them to pay attention. They are so wrapped up in family maintenance and trying to enjoy within religious bounds. We are more serious. But on the subtle plane, I have the equivalent of these distracted people. Prabhupada Mandir, you kindly allow us to be here, even though our mood is not so peaceful. Prabhupada is in glowing samadhi. We cannot attain an inner samadhi, but at least we can observe his and take in a little of it. This is all about Prabhupada, but the same thing could be said of the deities, Gauri Thai, Krishna Balaram, Radhisham, that we come and go, and there's always some benefit. But it's always like a huge continent of discovery that's awaiting for us to make, to put it in a positive way, rather than say that we can never appreciate them or love them. There's always the opportunity that we may. And they're so accessible. They're just like, it's an open secret waiting for us to wake up instead, not be so dull as to how accessible, as Prabhupada says, because you can't see Krishna, he comes in stone or brass, which you can see, but that is actually Krishna. And he allows you to dress him and serve him and so on. So the Prabhupada is the same thing. In his room, the letter on your desk is one to Makhanlal, 1971. Srila Prabhupada says he cannot attend the San Francisco Ratha Yatra this year. 3 years in a row he has gone there, but this time I have been very fervently requested to attend the London Ratha Yatra, where they are expecting 50,000, so it is not possible to attend both festivals. He will visit San Francisco when he comes to the U.S. Quote, so you should go on with the festival more enthusiastically, even in my absence. Srila Prabhupada is in Bombay, soon going to Moscow, then Paris. Our spiritual master flying all over the world, writing us a timely letter and some hope of seeing him again. Direct encouragement and answerability. Our simple desire is to put on a festival that he wants, or distribute, or preach somewhere and be answerable. He captured us. Whatever his style, whether you call him mellow or like a military general, it's Srila Prabhupada and we are his. Do you want to change that? Is it outdated? I don't think so. No one can ultimately tell me exactly how to worship you and see you. I must do it myself. This is called surrender of free will. Prabhupada's room. The double bed is low. I remember crowding around it in the most difficult time, the last hours. And now you are gone. And we continue, but not forever. We too must go. Srila Prabhupada said we have to die like a human being, like Bhishma Dev. Think of Krishna at the end. Serve actively as long as you can, and retire at the end or keep going until the last breath. When we leave and do circumambulation around him, that's nice. Now when I do the same circumambulation in other places, I remember this place. I want to feel that this is the most relevant and sacred place for me. You mean even more sacred than Raghunath Das Goswami's Samadhi at Radhakund? Yes, because I'm a stranger there, expected to give my rupees and keep moving. I'm not welcome. I don't understand the people or the mood. And Raghunath Goswami, although worshipable to me, is so intense, I cannot approach him. I try to. But with Srila Prabhupada, I'm at home. I have no material home, so this is my home. He is my spiritual father. He knows me. I'm sure he won't forget me. So it's natural I regard this as the best tirtha and the one where I can receive the most benefit, Jai Prabhupada. I was thinking like... That's, of course, one of the austerities of going to tirthas, and you pay the austerity and you get the benefit, like austerity, like being bothered by priests who want money, and so many things like that. What to speak of walking long distances, and the tirtha blesses us for going through those austerities, and if you're sincere, you get through the thorns of the experience to touch the rose. But still, at least this is one difficulty that I find, that I'm always like, always out of place there, I'm always a stranger there, and it's somebody's place, it's somebody's scene, and so if they want to check me out or if they want to bother me, it's their privilege, so to speak. And sometimes they're friendly, the sadhu at a certain place. But you're the pilgrim, and they're the sadhus, or the caretakers. But in this place, we're the resident sadhus. So not that should be a cause of complacency, but it does give you a kind of ease and feeling at home in the good sense of what it means to feel at home. But this home, this is not like... Just sitting on the back porch in some house in the country in America or something. It's home and near this most intense, sweet presence of Prabhupada. So that combination is very nice. Even when we go to places that are undoubtedly very, very sacred, still they're controlled by persons, and the situation is such that it's not that accessible. At least that's my experience. Neither would I want it to become accessible in terms of it becoming my home. Like Radhakund, there's no question of living at Radhakund because of the association you get there. I like the domestic place of my spiritual master. This means the room. I think of the rooms as more domestic. Often these public, often these groups who come, they go into the Prabhupada Mandir, they can't miss it, and they go in to see the deities in the temple room, but they often miss the residence. It's a little off the path for them, they don't know it, or maybe they don't want to go in there. So it doesn't get the same traffic. I call it the domestic place, because In the samadhi, Prabhupada is in such a grand form, but it's more like you're really walking in on his room. And I think I write that later, that sometimes the people come in and they stop at the door, partly because they think the samadhi is the murti is a real person, but also there's a sense like I'm walking into somebody's room. Am I allowed to do this? And it's kind of nice. They all, like a whole group, will stand shyly at the door, not knowing whether they can come in or not. Where they wouldn't do that in the samadhi mandir, so it's more somebody's room. I like the domestic place of my spiritual master with cheerful flower garlands, memories of his relishing prasadam, seeing his lotus feet on a white cushion. It's simple in here, in Indian style, but clean and comfortable too, suitable for me to come with pacified mind and get my orders from Srila Prabhupada. I've come for that. The letter on his desk today is to Upendra, January 72. Prabhupada was in Bombay. The caretakers of this room simulate Prabhupada's routine. Each day they place a new letter on Prabhupada's desk. So he reads the letter which has been typed by his secretary and now he's signing it. This shows us that letter writing was an important service, a way he managed and inspired devotees all over the world. I'm up to page 122, but that's as far as I marked in advance to read to you. So, any questions or comments about? I always thought the word imitate was, without exception, a bad word in Krishna consciousness. We say follow, don't imitate. But I was given some quotes from Prabhupada about japa, chanting. And there was a conversation, and the devotee was asking a leading question. I almost wish I had it here. I know where it is, but I don't think you could find it if I... In my closet, maybe the middle shelf, there's like a plastic envelope where I put letters and the dictaphone to answer letters. And then right under that, outside the envelope, there's this sheet of paper. Some very nice quotes. I was thinking of sharing them with you. It's mostly about whether we can chant more rounds. And Prabhupada is like, in these quotes, he's encouraging devotees to chant more than 16 rounds, but very skillfully doing it. And usually he'll say that, why stop at 16? You can chant more. But you cannot do it. But you cannot do it. Therefore, I say you must chant 16. That he would kind of repeat that strategy. But in this one conversation, the devotee, sometimes devotees want Prabhupada to say a certain thing. And so he seems to want Prabhupada to speak against chanting more than 16 rounds. And he may have in mind devotees who abuse this, who chant too much and don't do their work. I'll just read a few places I underlined. 16 rounds is the minimum. Otherwise, Haridas Thakur was 300,000. So you have to increase. That is the only remedy. If one has determination, he will make progress without any trouble. Devotee. Some devotees have fixed number different than 16. Some are chanting 20 minimum or 25. This is that I think the devotee is trying to speak against this. But Prabhupada doesn't quite pick up his program. Some are chanting 20 or 25. Prabhupada said, yes, it should be increased. Devotee, is this recommended for our Prabhupada? But don't decrease. Don't decrease, increase. Therefore, one number is fixed. At least this much I shall do. That is 16 rounds. Devotee, but you are recommending 16 as a minimum, and some devotees are choosing 20 as a minimum. Prabhupada, so who forbids? Who says that don't do it? So sometimes this teaching comes in ISKCON, that Prabhupada said, chant 16 rounds, and he also said, nobody should dare to chant more than 16 rounds. If anyone chants more than 16 rounds, he'll be severely punished, he'll get a terrible reaction or something. So Prabhupada, he says, some devotees, they make their minimum 20. Prabhupada, so who forbids? Who says don't do it? Devotee, they can chant? Prabhupada, yes, that is wanted. But because you cannot do it, therefore we have fixed up this minimum. Sankhyata, asankhyata. Sankhyata means with vow, numerical strength. And asankhyata means there is no limit. Devotee, all other activities, are some activities higher than others? Is chanting the most exalted or Prabhupada? Everything is exalted. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Then devotee says, then why is it recommended chanting in this age particularly? Prabhupada says, if you don't have a temple, you can't perform archan. But this chanting is common. It's the greatest common. So you can do Hare Krishna. Devotee, Prabhupada, if we chant more than 16 rounds, how can we know whether we are imitating Haridas Thakur or following his footsteps? Prabhupada, imitation is also good. If you imitate Haridas Thakur, that is also your great fortune, even if you imitate. Imitating does not mean you are condemned. Even if you imitate, that is also good. And there's a break in the tape. If you have some other business and you say, now I am imitating Haridas Thakur, I cannot do my service, that is very bad. I am imitating Haridas Thakur, that is not good, that is very bad. And the devotee says, yes, if the devotees are asked for service to do, they say, oh, I have to chant. Prabhupada says, oh, I am imitating. Yes, I am imitating Haridas Thakur. This is my first business. No, that is very bad. So, it was interesting that we can imitate, and in a certain sense it's not bad. But aside from that distinction, what's imitating and what's following, if you get inspired that something that I express or do and you want to do that, it's no harm. And provided, like here, that it doesn't, you don't, out of some wrong motive, you do it, and then you neglect standard service or standard behavior, and someone tries to correct you, and you say, no, I'm doing what my spiritual master did. He said, that would be very bad. That would be imitating. It's not like a carte blanche that anything spiritual master does, because he does it, it must be good for you. It's not necessarily good that you do that. So you should get particular instruction, whether we may do what he does. Prabhupada had a motto, do as I am doing, but there was like a spirit of that, not the letter. Imitation without realization, that I must get a cane like Prabhupada, I must move my head and move my hands like Prabhupada. It's all imitation. It's useless. Those are obvious imitations that don't have any good quality to them. But I pick up, like, from this Haridas Thakur, that almost in a childish way, but full of admiration, we just keep being drawn to the example of that great saint who always chanted. And we think, how nice that is, how wonderful, if I could always chant. And from time to time we make attempts or even steady those attempts to increase our chanting. I'm thinking of Haridas Thakur. There's some element of imitation there that's not harmful. It's all we're capable of. When I say a child, then you think how Prabhupada used to praise the children, and he said, they don't know what they're doing, they're just imitating, they're bowing down, they're clapping their hands, saying, Hare Krishna, this is very good. It does not go in vain, Krishna sees it. So we're spiritually like that too, childish, and sometimes that's all we can muster up, as I want to do like Prabhupada or Haridas Thakur. A little more of this devotee. Not imitate. You must fix up, devotee, counting. Prabhupada, you must fix up in numerical strength, whatever you can. But I have fixed up 16 rounds because you cannot do. Devotee, that's all we can do. Prabhupada, yes, and that is also difficult. Devotee laughs, yes. Prabhupada, otherwise Haridas Thakur was chanting 300,000. That is not possible. You should not imitate. But whatever you fix up, you must do. Devotee, yes, yes. Prabhupada, that is wanted. Devotee, yes. I was told in the beginning you asked the first disciples to chant 64 rounds. Prabhupada, yes. I asked them to chant 32. Prabhupada, grinning. Devotee, is that correct? Prabhupada, Sankhya-purva kanam agana natibi. Sankhya-purva, or numerical strength, must be there. Devotee, so if we are serious and sincere, it means that 16 will increase to continuous chanting. Prabhupada, you can do also now. It's not that because I've finished 16, you can increase, but that 16 must be finished. The devotee then says, what I mean is, that's to bring us to the platform of chanting constantly. That 16 at least we must do. Finally we may be able to do, if we're fortunate, chant constantly day and night. Prabhupada, yes. So we should not imitate. Someone else had a question? Yes. Well, the illusory Prabhupada may get subtle, the difficulty may get subtle, but in the gross form it can be checked by going to all these source materials, or all these ways that Prabhupada is manifest in his books and his various instructions, and then that won't happen. I heard that phrase from another devotee who told how he was living away from the association of devotees, and gradually he began to deviate from Prabhupada's standard and stopped the morning program and stopped many things that Prabhupada taught. And he was thinking that this is all right, justifying in different ways Prabhupada is pleased with this. So in his mind, there was a Prabhupada who was pleased with this was actually deviation. And then he said, then Prabhupada came to visit that place, and as soon as he saw him, he said that illusory Prabhupada was exploded as a myth. And he knew the real Prabhupada wouldn't like what he was doing. So that's what the illusory Prabhupada I meant to be. We can use all our faculties, even imagination. You can imagine what it may have been like if Prabhupada was here and I had been his disciple in this lifetime before he left. We should not take imagination to be reality. But it's another kind of way to approach. Well, just like Lord Chaitanya, when he chanted Hare Krishna and felt so many symptoms which appeared to him like madness, he asked the spiritual master, is this madness or something bona fide? And his spiritual master said, it is very good. These are symptoms of love of Godhead. So the spiritual master could also say, no, this is not good. You seem to be imagining some relationship with Prabhupada. He should be able to encourage us or adjust our way of approaching Prabhupada. Then the other concept I spoke about was your Prabhupada. That although there's a consensus in ISKCON as to what Prabhupada is, what he means, what he teaches, and we all accept that as Siddhanta, still, that's not all. You still need a personal relationship, your Prabhupada. And so that has to be developed. That's the positive side of the individual relationship. The negative would be that in the name of seeking something just your own, personal, aside from the consensus or standard Prabhupada, you develop an illusory relationship. That's like Sahajiya with Krishna. Krishna is real, but then we imagine that Krishna is talking to us, we imagine that we're with Krishna, rasa dance or something. This is all just imagination. It's not spiritual fact. Although Krishna is spiritual fact. And it's a fact that we can do these things when we're perfect. But the positive is that he wants you to develop a relationship with him. So when, like Prabhupada said to me, you love me, then I will love you. So as you express love of Prabhupada by service to him, then he becomes revealed to you while you're doing the service, especially. It's like devotees, when say that they're make some arrangement at the temple and many guests come and they're all seated before Prabhupada and someone is explaining to them about Prabhupada, then devotees, they get a real feeling of Prabhupada's presence or pleasure. And at other times like that, outside the temple when you're doing some preaching and there's nothing there, it's all maya except you speaking something you learned from Prabhupada, and then you feel he's with you, he's reciprocating with you. So by service, it comes, rather than by any technique of imaginative meditation. I use writing a lot because that's my nature to write. And in general, writing is good because it forces you to concentrate on the object. So there are other ways also. At least it's possible that a devotee who didn't know Prabhupada while he was here can develop a personal relationship with him. Now we're all in the state of disappearance from Srila Prabhupada. And just like when he was present, he would sometimes call people into his room. Usually he would call the recognized leaders and say something to them. I want this kind of preaching, I want that. And then they would tell the other devotees. But now he's not calling anybody into his room like that. He's not writing letters to leaders and they can share them with others. So you could say, well, now nobody has any chance of approaching him. But positively, everyone has a chance. He can reciprocate with anyone who is sincerely serving him. Why make a distinction that this person only came after 1977? So many of them who came before 1977, they're not interested in serving him anymore. In contact with devotees who did know Prabhupada while he was here and who are sincerely serving him is beneficial. I often think of Krishnadas Kaviraj, who came some 40 years after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya. He missed everything, you could say. Like some devotees feel, oh, I missed Prabhupada. I was in Maya. I was in the same city. I could have seen him, but I missed him. Or I was born too late. I feel so sorry. So he came, and the great dancer Gauranga had already gone, and many of his chief associates had gone. But he became the most recognized devotee for giving now, at that time and well into the future now, the teachings and the nectar of Lord Chaitanya. So he had association with Raghunath Das Goswami and others, but also he got direct realization. He had direct dream of Lord Nityananda and Madan Mohan deity. So a qualified devotee can come at any time and be the best devotee of Prabhupada. We all have to guard against the illusory Prabhupada, who suits our own purposes, who endorses our deviations. But by regularly reading his teachings, that's not likely to happen. When you regularly read Prabhupada in a personal way, thinking that when I read, there'll be some sustenance for my life, there'll be direction for the very things I'm thinking of now, then you'll find that those things do come. If you can read in that way, then the chance of illusory Prabhupada will be minimized. Even if you're contemplating some Maya, then you'll be reading Prabhupada and he'll say, in effect, I know what you're thinking, but this is what I say about it. I don't approve of that. So why don't you do like this? So it makes life very interesting to keep trying to fine-tune and find out what Prabhupada wants of us by hearing from him. You read Prabhupada trained his followers to dedicate themselves to their project and not just stay in Vrindavan. Would it be appropriate to stay in Vrindavan to serve and hear and chant during Vanaprastha in preparation for sannyas and the preaching of this ashram? I think it's appropriate for different devotees to stay in Vrindavan at different stages in their life. And there's undoubtedly a great potency here, a special presence that is not only known to the devotees who live here all the time, but those of us who come and go. When we come, Vrindavan works on us and brings about changes that it seems couldn't take place elsewhere. But when it's appropriate to come here and when it may be appropriate to stay and preach about Vrindavan Chandra, about Krishna, outside of Vrindavan, I think it varies in a person's life. Some devotee was writing to me why they didn't come to Vrindavan this year. And it was, they were really involved in something, some nice service. There's several instances, I can't recall the details. But they said, do you think it was right that I didn't come? And I said, oh yes, from what you say it sounds like if you had, they just got something going. Maybe somebody opened a preaching center and it just started going and he's responsible for the whole thing. He just can't go now. Or it'll just fall apart. So there are times when it's better to stay away, and there are times when it's good to come. So I don't think it has to be like made a rule that in order to enter Vanaprastha ashram, then you could come to Vrindavan. Although the verses will state that you should go to the forest, the vana, leave material life and household life, which is like a dark well, and go to the vana. Prahlad Maharaj teaches his father, and Prabhupada changes the translation to say vana or Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, something like that. You should go, not just to any forest. Vana means forest. But should we go live in the forest? No, he said vana means van, Vrindavan. So that's where the van that we should go to. So there is an indication in the scripture that Vanaprastha is nicely performed in Vrindavan. But Vanaprastha, of course, Vanaprastha is, literally speaking, we couldn't perform. You wear bark clothing and eat only roots and things like that, as it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada's general description of it is that a husband and wife, they still stay together, but they wind up their business, actual house and household is left to older children, and now they just go together like humble pilgrims from place to place, only for spiritual cultivation, and not with the family duties or financial worries. So that indicates traveling is also good, and that the wife is also there. The wife is left only in sannyas stage. That's another way to consider Vanaprastha. Whatever is favorable for devotional stuff. Do what is favorable, avoid what is unfavorable. So we have to see. It's not just a hard and fast rule that it's always favorable to be in Vrindavan for Vanaprastha. You come and try it. It may not be favorable. Then do what's favorable. Because we also know Vrindavan is a place for very advanced bhajan. So for some, Rupa Goswami says we should live in Vrindavan, or if we can't go there, we should live there mentally. So we may take that and say, if you can't go there, well, no problem, I can go there, I have a couple of $1,000. Why should I consider this second-rate, the second-rate thing that Rupa Goswami has said? It's not for me, I can go to Vrindavan, I've got a visa. But actually, there's a deep meaning in that other clause. It's a relief clause for us, that if you can't go to Vrindavan, it means that for many of us, it's better not to go to Vrindavan. Because we go to Vrindavan, and we get in spiritual difficulty instead of make spiritual progress, make offenses in Vrindavan, and try to imitate the advanced stage. So it might be better for us to be outside of Vrindavan, but to cultivate separation from Vrindavan and qualify ourselves by active service. So you have to consider when it's favorable for you and when it's not. It was favorable for Prabhupada to live in Vrindavan in the 1950s, late 1950s and early 1960s, Radha-Damodar, for writing and Vrindavan bhajan. And then it was favorable for him to leave. It wasn't favorable for world preaching to stay in Vrindavan, but he went to New York and everywhere else. So on a tiny scale, we also have a time when it's good and a time when it's good to go. good to stay and a time when it's good to go. And we have to develop our instincts to know that now I should go, or now I should go away from Vrindavan, or now I better get to Vrindavan. I've been in the West too long, I'm becoming very westernized, I really need to go to Vrindavan. And similarly, I'm becoming too familiar with Vrindavan, and I'm losing the spirit of preaching, of the Prabhupada advocates. I should go out and into that world. And we can take help from others also. Oh, I said we would end with a little kirtan, so why don't we do that now? And then, you have any prasadam? Yeah.